Thank you, Larry. I appreciate the opportunity to address the group here this morning. Let me tell you what I'm not going to do. I'm not going to try to explain all the volatility we have had, and we certainly have had it. In my 30-some years of trading cotton, we normally view a 20 to 25-cent range in a given marketing year as being about average, and this year we had, from the high to the low, roughly 70 cents. And I don't need to tell the audience that is, it's been a hugely disruptive year from that perspective. There were a couple of things. Everybody, we all focus on the March 3rd and 4th event when the ICE exchange went electronic, and that same first day we saw a market that was all over the place. It traded up as high as $1.08, and the result of all that was to put a number of my merchant friends out of business. I estimate that we've probably lost 35 to 40% of our world merchandising capacity as a result of the events of that particular two-day period. It also caused a lot of mistrust and gave people, or gave particularly European traders and merchants, a lack of confidence in the market, and to the point where many of them don't even use the New York futures and options markets anymore. And probably from your perspective, the thing that's most disturbing is the fact that you weren't able to take advantage of that, because there weren't many merchants out there willing or able to allow you to price your cotton. Now, you could have sold futures, you could have written options, or bought options, as the case may be, but the real tragedy from the people in this room's perspective is you couldn't take advantage of that. I'd like to just give you just a brief explanation and description of some of the market participants, and explain a little bit their role and why they are there and what they do. Obviously, the first category is the people in this room, the producers. You use the markets to price your product. The second category, the commercial trade, includes firms like mine, textile mills around the world, and other supply chain folks. Those are what we commonly think of as the two major participants in our markets. However, the last two categories, the speculators and the passive index funds, are actually, in my opinion, very important participants that we need to make these markets work. In the spec category, you've got the local traders, the floor traders. There is still an options floor, and there are still a number of local traders that do provide liquidity to the market when it's needed. The hedge funds, and if there is a villain in this group, it's probably the hedge funds. These are the guys that are the fast money, the money that is highly leveraged, and is probably the money that disappeared as the markets did their thing. You've got some black box specs, and those are just the computer guys, the computer geeks that they basically drive the trading by the software that they have. This new group that's entered really in the last couple of years, what we call the passive index funds, they're the pension funds, and the endowments, the mutual funds, and foundations, and they're really what we call the long-only group. They're there to use the commodity markets as a hedge against inflation. Now, why we got these four categories, and what useful purpose does the market serve for those? The producers, don't need to tell you guys, you're using the market to seek protection against falling prices. the commercial trade. We're looking at protecting ourselves, the textile mills as well, against rising or falling prices. The specs are, they're there to make money. It's there, these index funds, and they're simply there to, they have a market opinion, and they're there in and out of the market, and we need those folks. Again, if it was just the producers and the commercial trade, we would, the market would not function. It would actually be a disaster. The passive index funds, they would say they're there to hedge as well. Their hedge is against inflation, and we've seen a massive amount of money move into the markets. They typically move into the spot futures month, and they're there to. They saw in mid-year, particularly mid-08, as we're all concerned about inflation. There are a lot of portfolio managers and these pension funds moved money into the market as a hedge protection. Now, it is, I think, coincidental that CalPERS, which is a large California pension group, announced just ahead of the March 3rd event that they were going to spend or invest a lot of money in commodity markets, and they did, but the money moved in very gradually, and I really don't think that was a disruptive force, although many people actually do believe that is what caused that particular event or contributed to it greatly. So we'll move forward here. This particular chart here shows you just how much money moved into our markets, and you see in mid-08, roughly the Goldman Sachs fund and the AIG funds, if you total those in July of 08, there was approximately $200 billion. And that's dropped to a current $60 billion. Now, most of that money is, some of that money was lost, disappeared. But the majority of that money is was scared out of markets. Now, that's not all in the cotton market. In fact, a very small percentage of that money is actually in the cotton market. Roughly, these funds invest roughly 2 to 3% only of their monies in the cotton futures and options markets. So it's a very small percentage, but it does significantly impact market movements, and it is a very important factor. The next slide here is an open interest slide, and it is interesting. These are percentages, and I don't think you can see. There's a dotted line that's the total open interest, but our open interest in cotton has dropped from roughly something over 300,000 contracts in March to around 120,000 contracts today. And I think if you can point to one statistic that would explain where we are price-wise today versus where we were back in the early spring, this would be it. A tremendous decline in open interest, and driven either by losses, lack of confidence, or you know, whatever you want to ascribe that to. Let's go back and talk about this passive investor, and I mentioned a little bit. These are the pension funds, the mutual funds, and the people that are seeking protection against expected inflation rates. They're there for that reason. They're also there. They saw a huge increase in demand from China and India commodity prices, particularly food and the fuel as well. But and this particular factor to me is one I don't think we should take our eye off of, because that demand still exists. And the reason it may have gotten overheated as other commodity prices like oil and so forth exploded, which also had an impact on our market. But that demand is still there and is still growing, albeit at perhaps a slightly slower rate. So, and I think the third point here, the domestic monetary policy and the U.S. dollar had a significant impact in the passive investors' desire to participate in commodity markets in general. We do in our company. We correlate a lot of things, and the most interesting correlation that we've noted in the past 12 months has been the correlation between the dollar and and cotton prices, and that may be the one factor that may ought to be watched more than anything else. So, what makes commodity markets work? The number one thing here is we need to have convergence. We need to have a market that's balanced, a market that is too big for any one major player to control it, and too small for people to dump, or producers actually, or co-ops to dump cotton on the market. And we clearly have convergence in our cotton market. We have capacity for certificated stocks. These are tenderable supplies of cotton that are stored in licensed certificated warehouses around the cotton belt. And we have, as you can see from this chart, compared to our corn and soybean friends, a hugely, and I would suggest maybe too much, capacity as measured against open contract interest and or U.S. production. The commodity that's not on this chart that probably is in the worst shape in terms of convergence is actually wheat. And you saw Minneapolis wheat futures go to around $20 a bushel simply because there wasn't an adequate supply of high protein wheat, and folks got folks who were short that contract could not find that commodity to deliver, and therefore the participants that happened to be long the wheat market, knowing that, made it very expensive for the shorts to buy their way out of their positions. But the point here is we have the number one factor in what makes commodity markets work, and that is that relationship between cash prices and futures prices, which five times a year have to come together, and we have that in cotton. And we don't, it's unlikely in my mind or my opinion to ever see a situation like we had in the soybean market or the silver market with the Hunt fiascos several years ago. That's not likely to happen in cotton simply because we do have adequate convergence and storage and stocks that will allow or not allow a major market player to manage the market, if you will. This basically reiterates what I just said. The balance here is that it's got to be large enough not to allow a single trader to control it, and it should not be so large that it becomes a dumping ground for cash cotton, and that maybe the most difficult thing for people in this audience to understand, but it does not serve you well to have a futures market where there are massive deliveries. Delivery points need to be not in producing areas, not in consuming areas. They need to be in neutral areas as they are, and you actually do receive a premium over the value of cotton that is tenderable or deliverable on the market. And if we open up delivery points and allow our markets in origination areas to become deliverable, then that I do not think will serve the producer segment well at all. I think there are a number of factors. The market clearly is suffering a confidence crisis, and I think that these three things here are probably the three things that are most important. Transparency. All participants should report their positions on an aggregated basis, and what I mean by that is cash, futures, and over-the-counter transactions. Every participant needs to be required to report that. At this present time, the hedge funds are not, and that needs to be addressed. That needs to change. My company, other merchants, other market participants report on a weekly and daily basis our positions, and it only makes sense that everyone needs to be reporting these positions. As a result of this market disruption, there were a number of hearings in Washington, a lot of concern from people like yourselves in this room about the markets not working. And the fact that there are these hedge funds hide behind market participants that allow them to embed their positions in a hedger's book and not report them. They found several firms out of compliance with spec limits, and I don't know how you ever monitor or measure participants' positions if it's not reported. And it takes an event like that to expose people that are not, that are basically hiding behind these curtains or of other people's books and so forth. Speculative limits, there's requests for the CFTC to increase speculative limits. Our segment of the industry is on record as opposing this. I think it's clear that we can't manage what we have, and we need to be able to do that before spec limits are increased. And so we strongly feel that they need to stay where they are until we get that under control. Daily trading limits. One of the major things that caused allowed the March event to get so out of control was the fact that the ICE exchange margined to these what we call the synthetic close or the options close, and it was well beyond the financial ability of many of the market participants to meet those margin calls, and so we need to stick with the daily trading limits. Stop trading when we hit these 3, 4, and 5 cent limits, and use these same limits for our margin calls. So let's talk in summary. We do have in the cotton world, we do have adequate, well-located delivery capacity to allow convergence. That's working well. We do have an adequate balance and participation from producers, merchants, and speculators. But what we need is improved transparency or this reporting of all market participants and strengthened enforcement of current regulations. And we do need to monitor speculative and daily trading limits with these daily trading limits to be used for the fluctuation margin calls. Now, I might mention at this point there is an ongoing CFTC investigation into what happened in March. There has been nothing released or no, I have no information. It's going to be very interesting when the report is issued and we and they will be able to find out who did the trading and what caused what happened to happen. So it's it'll be a very interesting report. And our segment of the industry, the merchant segment of the industry, is certainly supporting cooperating, and we want as much as you want to get to the bottom of what did happen and put the safeguards in control to not allow that to happen again. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and appreciate it very much.